Mini episode 222 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by that NBA lottery pick, your pop culture influenced look at the world of hoops. Follow them on the web at thatnbalotterypick.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 222. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. Got with me here today another one of our original FDH Lounge dignitaries to break down the college football bowl season and also the college football coaching carousel, which is still ongoing. As I say, he is one of our original FDH Lounge dignitaries, also our FDH Director of Research. I can only be speaking of my good longtime friend, Nate Noy. Good to have him back on again here to break it all down. Nate, how you doing, my friend?
If the day after Christmas for that Little Caesars Bowl between Western Kentucky and Central Michigan, that'll be such... No, wait a minute, it won't be.
Yeah, well, there is overload in the bowl season. No question about that. Let's work our way into that. Let's start with the Heisman, which we saw this weekend here. Johnny Football is now Johnny Heisman. What really just struck me about the whole proceedings is Matt Barkley, Landry Jones, Monty Ball, to a certain extent, even once the season started, your boy Geno Smith. What is it about these races that we've seen the last couple of years? It ends up being a guy that you really wouldn't have pegged at the beginning of the season. And in the case of this year, all the top challengers really kind of coming out of nowhere. Matt Ateo, just because defensive players are never there. Colin White was not anybody that anybody had pegged to be in the discussion. What is it about the changing nature of these Heisman races where everything you think you know at the beginning of the season and what looks like a huge depth of contenders? In this case, there was only three and nobody that was on the radar when it all started.
Yeah, I'm with you, Rick. You know, to me, it comes down to, you know, a lot of time people talk about a signature moment for a Heisman. And I think we got that this year. As you said, the front runners really faded quickly this season. We had Barkley, who, you know, laid an egg against Stanford, and then they lost a few more times. Geno came out and threw the 8 touchdowns against Baylor. It was insane. And then they lost a couple games, and that was it for his candidacy. You know, when everybody in the world was basically watching when A&M upset Alabama, a game nobody thought they could. And he had that signature moment at that point. He had put together good numbers the rest of the time. And for Texas A&M to go into the SEC like they did and complete a successful season, I mean, it all just kind of converged for him to be the guy this year. And you think about things like in the past, you know, Desmond Howard. There are a lot of these Heisman Trophy winners have a signature moment. You can look back and you can say, yep, there it is. That's where he won the Heisman. Clearly that's the case this season. Really not the case last season with RG3, but I think it just makes it a lot easier for the voters when the front runners kind of fade and you get a moment that's going to kind of encapsulate the whole season of football, and that happened this year for Johnny Football, and we'll see, you know, we'll see if he can repeat. I know that a lot of news out today that Texas A&M's already blown a budget on a marketing campaign for him to try to get him to repeat. You and I have talked about this off air. He may have three more cracks at it because he doesn't really look like a prototypical NFL quarterback, so he may play four seasons there. But in the SEC, who knows? That team could come out and go 3-9 next year and it'll be Hasta La Vista. So, you know, he clearly deserved it. You know, they did beat the best team in the country because of him, and all everybody else just kind of faded away. But I'm not sure, you know, if it's weird because you also have that don't want to give somebody a second one mentality for some of these voters. We'll see if that can hold up for the next three seasons, at least two.
Yeah, Archie Griffin, our boy, he's dodged a few bullets there over the years from Jason White, who everybody tends to forget about as far as somebody who was a past Heisman Trophy winner. He had a very forgettable year when he came back, I think, for his sixth campaign. Tim Tebow, I think we all thought was going to be a mortal threat. I mean, you keep going on and on down the line, but yeah, this looks like the biggest threat we've seen yet, and I don't think it's 20/20 hindsight to say that. Like you said, probably three more looks at as who of his size and because he's as much of a runner as he is a passer, doesn't project to be necessarily a first-round quarterback, at least as of right now. And again, now, like you said, the SEC grinder, that may keep him from making it. But, I mean, this has got to be the most nervous sleep Archie Griffin's had in quite some time, I would think.
Absolutely. And, you know, he's hoping that an undefeated Buckeye team will get his quarterback a Heisman next year to save him. We'll see. So it's possible, and I'm sure he'll be one of the front runners. How could he not be? As long as they keep winning with the kind of numbers Braxton Miller put up this season, he'll open the season as one of the guys. And you know, maybe the Buckeyes run at 12-0, and A&M finishes 9-3, 8-4. It'd be Braxton Miller's trophy. So yeah, how ironic is it that at least for the next, and up to possibly two seasons, if Miller were to come back, you know, he might have a couple chances to block Johnny Football with his own guy. So,
well, the only thing we know is that Manziel is guaranteed one more vote than any of his competitors the next couple of years in this thing. It'd be funny if it came down to that one vote. That would be rather amusing if he kind of gave it to himself. As far as the carousel goes, before we get into the bowls here, and looking at some of the moves here and the trickle down of how one change causes a change at another place here. I'll start by mentioning a school that I've long rooted for, Tennessee. I never liked Derek Dooley as a coach in the first place. I'll just get that out there. I never thought that he was had the stature to be in that chair, so to speak, and I think he kind of proved me right, unfortunately, the couple of years. They go and get Butch Jones. I've heard some criticism of that move, but Cincinnati was the launching pad for Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, so I'm not necessarily sure why Butch Jones is considered to be a lightweight in some corners of Foul Nation. But the job is now open at Cincinnati. They go and hire Tommy Tuberville, which I think a lot of people were surprised he would take that job, thus now causing a vacancy in the state of Texas. On and on it goes here. So what are your thoughts on some of the big headlines we've seen with the coaching moves in recent days and weeks?
Yeah, the two things you and I talked about off air, you know, the fact that the Texas Tech job all of a sudden is less attractive than the Cincinnati job, that somewhat blows my mind. You know, you're moving into a conference that has a BCS guarantee for one more year, and then that conference becomes the same as the Mountain West and Conference USA and the MAC. They have no guarantees to BCS, no guaranteed access. I mean, that one is really an interesting move. And going into a conference is just disintegrating around it. I mean, the Big East has lost, you know, all the marquee programs. It's basically like going from the Big 12 to the MAC almost. The Big East is just like the MAC within a couple of years. I really believe that. So that move is very perplexing. You know, I guess if you look at your Big 12 competition, say, I don't think I can ever win a Big 12 title with this team. I guess if I go to Cincinnati and run the table at 12-0 and get in the BCS bowl, maybe that'll get me back into the SEC or something. So I don't quite understand the mindset, but he made the move. The other really perplexing off-season move here is what happened with Wisconsin and taking the Arkansas job.
Yeah.
How is going from a team that has a chance in the Big Ten to a team that has to look up at LSU and Alabama in the division and Johnny Football for the next three seasons, how is that a right move? I mean, unless you're just worried about Barry Alvarez looking over your shoulder for your entire career because you were his handpicked successor, that one blew my mind more than any is the move to Arkansas.
That was shocking. By the way, a side note on Cincinnati, a lot of times fans will begrudge coaches that move on and take the better jobs. All I can say about this is for anybody that wants to begrudge Brian Kelly and Butch Jones for having moved on from there, the last two times Cincinnati had a coaching vacancy, they hired away the coach from Central Michigan. This time they hired away a coach from Texas Tech. So say what you will about these guys, but they really elevated the stature of the program. I find it inexplicable, as you do, that Tommy Tuberville went there, but would it have happened the last time they had a vacancy or the time before? I think not. So it's
no,
a sign that, you
all.
Know, Cincinnati, all joking aside that I've made, and I've made a lot of jokes about the city and program, they have risen up in the world. And I think the Tuberville thing, the fact that it's even halfway plausible, speaks to that. The Bielema thing, I will mention this. I did happen to hear him on Jim Rome's program the other day saying something about there's some kind of this is a law, I guess, in the state of Wisconsin that restricts, I guess, assistant coaching salaries, and that the pool could only get to be so big, and it had to be it had nothing to do with anything from Barry Alvarez or the administration, but it was some kind of state law in Wisconsin that was restricting the size of that he was losing assistant coaches to other programs because he couldn't afford to keep up with the pay rate. Now, again, probably just an excuse, and the big amount of case that Arkansas threw his way probably turned his head more than anything. But, yeah, on a wins and losses basis, unless he's that intimidated by Urban Meyer, and I understand there are a lot of coaches in the Big Ten that are right now, with that team having gone 12-0 out of absolutely nowhere this year. But, yeah, I find it as inexplicable as you do.
And maybe that's it. I mean, Arkansas, shoot. Look what you can get away with as head coach at Arkansas. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, your paycheck's bigger. You pay your assistants what you want. You could pay your players what you want. Maybe that's part of the allure of going down there. But still, I don't see how he's going to have a team that can compete. Especially you lose your quarterback that's going to be in the NFL next year. You're going to all of a sudden try to compete with LSU and Alabama and the next three seasons of A&M, at least a couple. How much of a leash does he have? How long is he going to be able to go there? Arkansas's got a short, you know, you got a short life to be a coach there. They want you to play for the national title, and it's not exactly an easy task in that conference trying to recruit at Arkansas. If I'm a kid and I'm a five-star talent, five-star blue chipper, and I got Nick Saban saying, come to me, you know, we're going to win a national title, and I got Arkansas saying, well, come to me and, you know, you'll be my featured player, yada, yada. But I don't know. I don't see how anybody can go into Arkansas and compete for a national title, which is what their expectation level is, even though it's unrealistic. You know, clearly Kentucky will always be, you know, the football program is.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's a joke, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, surprising us that they could get an assistant coach on that level because, again, presumably he figures he's going to move on to bigger and better things eventually. But that's predicated on having, you know, at least a respectable career at Kentucky, and there are certainly no guarantee of that being in the SEC. Yep. Speaking of the SEC and speaking of the same – I'm sorry, this would be the SEC West. Auburn, Gene Chizik fired 2 years after a national championship. Gus Malzahn, former assistant there, part of the national championship team, was a coordinator at that time. He takes the job. Garrett Hall moves to Purdue after an unprecedented turnaround against 2 years. So Purdue ends up moving up in the world. It would see Jeff Ford finally thrown out at Cal, which is a little bit 82 and over the years. Danny Dykes ends up there, and that will be a very interesting situation to follow. Tom O'Brien fired from the back down in Carolina State. Dave Doran will be moving right from Northern Illinois and blowing off the bowl to go do that. So these are a couple of the big moves that have happened thus far. And any thoughts on any of those, Nate?
Yeah, the Auburn thing somewhat surprising, I guess. I mean, wow. You win a national title and 2 years later you're shown the door. That, whoa. I mean, I guess that just shows us the nature of SEC football. You have 12 teams that come in there, maybe, or 14 now, and maybe Vanderbilt doesn't count. So you have 13 teams that want to go in there and think, you know, every single season going in that they can compete for a BCS bowl. Kentucky clearly shouldn't be in that mindset either, but the other 12 think that. And at the end of the day, they all can't 12 go every year. And, you know, there's it seems to me like it's just, especially when you've got the Alabamas and the Floridas and the LSUs and the Thunders, you're almost set up to fail. It's almost a loss for words to run a guy out after 2 years after winning a national title. That's you know, I guess Auburn fans also have a very short they have little patience when it comes to that. But man, you know, what kind of extension did he get after that national title? You know, that's the other thing that really burns me is these coaches get these nice extensions after good seasons. Charlie Weiss had one too, you know, and 2 years later they're shown the door and the school's paying a big buyout. Come on, schools, get, you know, figure out what you're doing here. Why are you going to give this guy a big extension and then 2 years later run him out the door anyway, costing your school millions of dollars?
Well, in this case, especially because you had the whole Cam Newton scandal floating around while the team was chasing the national championship. Already knew there, and again, the NCAA in the end, accepted the explanation that his father acted alone. Yeah, right. But anyways, you already had a little bit of a whiff there of something going on. And it's the scandal part and the subsequent potential violations that brought him down, as well as the record and getting blown out in the Iron Bowl as badly as he did. But here's the funny thing, Nate. It's the trajectory of this thing, truly shocking. Said to me at the beginning of the thing, if they'd have said, hey, yeah, Gene Chizik's only going to last 4 years, I would have been like, yeah, I don't think that was a very good hire anyways. He didn't do a very good job at Iowa State. That wouldn't surprise me. But if you were to tell me those 4 years would include a national championship in there, and he still wouldn't make it past that point, wow. Yeah, I would have been truly shocked, and I was truly shocked when I went down, as you were.
Yeah, that's the nature of the business, I guess. And but I don't know. I mean, it's not like they weren't selling seats still. So.
Yeah. Truly surprising. But yeah, Auburn being as horrific as they were meant that they would be sitting out this bowl. They wouldn't make the minimum number of wins necessary to make it. I have to look at this and kind of chuckle for the bad luck of CBS, for example. Sun Bowl, 31st. When looking at bowls that are here, that is historic ones, time and El Paso. It's fun to watch because, you know, the sea and, you know, the sun's going on the old El Paso as they're playing. It's kind of a fun watch if you happen to be in front of your team that day. But 7-5 USC, okay, so far so good. Even though they're 7-5, it's still USC, and they're still talented. 6-7 Georgia Tech. Sorry about your luck, CBS, but that's the only bowl game you're televising this year.
You're right about that, and it's a sham because, you know, Georgia Tech, they put in all these rules during the summer that these 6-7 teams won't get to be in the polls. Georgia Tech applies for a waiver, and voila, they get the waiver. It was put in place because last year UCLA at 6-7 got in there and got whacked. So Georgia Tech's probably going to finish 6-8, and they were a bowl team. What a joke, and I do feel bad for CBS. At least on the flip side of all the bowls that are attractive, Fox sure got one, didn't they?
Oh, man. How about that for their only bowl game? And I think three-time lounge guest Kenny Albert, I think, will be calling it again. He's called the last couple of Cotton Bowls. This one is going to be a doozy. Prime time, January 4th from Arlington, Texas at Cowboys Stadium on Fox. Number 10, A&M with Johnny Heisman, Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel versus number 12, Oklahoma. Landry Jones, a guy who thought he might be hoisted that trophy at the end of the year.
Yeah, especially after he replaced Bradford in his sophomore year, everybody did think he'd have a Heisman in his future, but that is amazing. I mean, yeah, the network not getting that one, that's a beautiful thing. So, yeah, that one is definitely one of the most attractive bowls of the whole season, and they don't even have it. So I'm a happy camper with that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's tremendous. Those are the only ones, I believe, as I'm looking this year. Yeah, those are the only ones outside the family of the ESPN networks here that have them, most of them being on ESPN. ESPN2, as far as it goes, who made it and who didn't, I was saying all year, at Homer, I was saying, if my Ohio Bobcats run the table, notwithstanding our admittedly putrid schedule, we would be in one of the BCS bowls. Ultimately, we collapsed that shameful performance against Miami at the end of the game. As I've said previously, Tyler Templeton is dead to me after that performance. But finishing at 8-4, stubbing our ending up at the Independence. But if we'd run, if we'd been 12-0, you'll never convince me, Nate, that even with the perfect schedule at 12-0, we wouldn't have made it. When an 11-1 Northern Illinois team, admittedly with a better schedule, but still 12-1 winning the MAC, but since when is a MAC team going to make it with one? An undefeated MAC team, no matter how bad the schedule, would have made it, clearly.
Exactly. There's absolutely no question, because you can also, in hindsight, say, well, they would have had to beat Kent and Northern Illinois. And,
yes,
you know, at the end of the day, Kent, had they won against Northern Illinois, would have been in that Orange Bowl, I think, is what we see now. So had OU run the table and picked up the wins over Northern Illinois and Kent, the computer boost they would have gotten, it's that slash the fact that Wisconsin beat Nebraska slash the fact that the Big East had nobody, that Louisville's in there, that would have pushed any MAC champion into the top 16, whether it be had Kent State beat Northern, had OU beat Kent and Northern, or Northern, who's there. Clearly this season, that was the case. Now it's some to do with the team that got there, but a lot to do with the Big East falling apart and the fact that Wisconsin was able to beat Nebraska and open up a vacuum at the bottom of the top 16 for one of those MAC schools to be able to get into a BCS bowl. So I'm happy with it. We'll see if that's a good game or not. On paper, you'd think Florida State would whack Northern, but, you know, we've seen stranger things. You and I talked about this the year that Alabama had a letdown and had to play a 12-0 Utah team. Utah beat them in the Sugar. So it's possible. Just because on paper it might look like Florida State should kill them, Northern might be way more motivated than Florida State is for this game. So we'll see how that all plays out.
That's absolutely true. And I run by you off air. Let's put this to the test on air now that we know what the bowl lineup is. And that being that when there is the reorganization come 2014 of the bowls here, and with ESPN maintaining their stranglehold on the whole thing, that I think they're going to think twice about putting bowl games in between the quote-unquote BCS bowls and then the national championship game. Because let's take a look at what we got here this year, the primetime bowls. Now, the Rose Bowl's not primetime on January 1. It's at 5 o'clock. Stanford and Wisconsin, that would be a real interest. Orange Bowl, State Northern Illinois, yawn. The next, Sugar Bowl, number 4, Florida, number 22, Louisville. Again, not really going to move the needle. Yeah, that, I don't think that game's going to spill a whole lot of beer down at the VFW hall. I really
January 3rd, 49-point wins, right? That's ugly.
January 3rd, Fiesta Bowl. Okay, now we're talking to whatever extent. Number 5, Oregon versus number 7, Kansas State. But the thing of it is that the Fiesta Bowl is actually weakest of any of the bowls in terms of heritage. The Fiesta Bowl was kind of lucky to be thrown into the BCS because, again, if you remember, they took the Cotton Bowl spot. The Cotton Bowl was big bowls. They were still playing it at the Cotton Bowl. You didn't have the facilities. The Fiesta Bowl wormed their way in there. So you look at those games, and then the January 5th, the BBVA Compass Bowl from Birmingham, Alabama, 6-6 Pittsburgh against 6-6 Ole Miss. January 6th, Gaddy Bowl, Mobile, Alabama, number 25, Kent State, 11-2 versus Arkansas State, 9-3. I think what happens, Nate, the fact that all these games are on ESPN, you are lowering the prestige of the Fiesta, Sugar, and Orange rather than raising the prestige of the Compass and GoDaddy Bowl in those circumstances. And that's what I think ESPN is going to take a look at subsequently here. That the fact that it's all on ESPN, for folks my age and older, maybe not necessarily younger than us, but there are a whole thing of, especially folks that are significantly, whether it's on network, that matters. It really does matter if a game's on ESPN, in terms of perception. Maybe that won't be the case in 10 years or 15 years, but right now it just looks like an amorphous kind of blend of whatever, as opposed to these are the prestige games that you need to make time to tune into.
I agree with you completely, Rick, and we'll see if that does change 2 years from now. And I don't know this either. I don't know if you know off the top of your head. Is the Cotton Bowl, did ESPN manage to swoop that up as part of this playoff system, or is it still going to be standalone and will Fox still carry it? Because it's nice to see that type of game available outside of the network. You know, and it's a travesty that all these games are on ESPN. I mean, some of them should be thrown to ABC. The only bowl from January 1st on thrown to ABC is the Georgia-Nebraska Capital One Bowl. I'd hope that Fox retained the Cotton, but I think the Cotton got into that rotation of 6 to do the whole semifinal hosting, yada, yada, which means maybe they're locked into ESPN as part of that deal. So
they are, and I hear you on that. I hear you, and I agree with you, you know, to that extent. Having said that, and there was a story on CBSSports.com this weekend that the Cotton Bowl will apparently there will runners to host the 2015 National Championship game. So it's one of those things, I agree with you. I hate to see the worldwide monolith get their claws into everything. I think this Fox still have some stuff and some of the other networks. But having said that, if it restores the prestige of the Cotton Bowl in terms of that being a game that's must-see, that's holding, you know, a national semifinal, or if I guess they would call it the Cotton Bowl if it was the championship game. But regardless of that, it's still good to see the heritage of the Cotton Bowl, you know, moving more front and center in my estimation. And to me, that kind of offs the concern of ESPN everything.
Right. One other thought, too, though, you know, we talk about bowls like the BBVA Compass Bowl between Pitt and Mississippi and the GoDaddy.com Bowl between Kent and Arkansas State in between the first and the championship. If not for ESPN, I don't think those bowls can even survive, you know? I mean, do those bowls even exist without the guarantee that ESPN is going to be televising them? So if ESPN decides those bowls stay between the first and the national title, they stay there. They don't have a choice. ESPN will decide that. So
they will. They will. My guess is ESPN moves them behind the December 31st bowl. That's my sense going forward.
Right, because we're going to have these national semifinals and we're going to have a national championship. I don't want anything in between my national semifinals and my national championship. Do you? There's no need for any crap. That's a week of build-up for the national title game. I think we will see that, Rick. I it's like the Super Bowl build-up. Why in the world would you put crap bowls in the middle? I understand it now. We're all waiting for that last game. Let's put a couple crap bowls in there to keep the fans happy. We won't need that anymore. We'll have a Final Four and then we'll have a title game. Let's hope they move all the crap bowls to the beginning of December and we don't have to deal with this anymore, because you're right. It certainly, you know, downgrades the value of bowls like the Orange and the Sugar, especially when you get teams like we have this year competing in those bowls. It brings them down to the level of the GoDaddy.com Bowl when you're just throwing them all on the same network all, you know, day after day. There's another bowl. Oh, there's another bowl. You know, you just certainly don't feel any prestige for those bowls at that point. So.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100% on that. Before we turn our attention to the title game here, let me just throw out a few of these other things from the quote-unquote minor bowls, see if any of these are grabbing your attention in particular. The ones that I'm looking at with some degree of interest here, December 22nd, Las Vegas, Mako Las Vegas Bowl, 3:30 Eastern time on ESPN, 10-2 Boise versus 7-5 Washington. The Holiday Bowl, that's always one of the ones that's fairly interesting traditionally. December 20th from San Diego, ESPN, 9:45 Eastern time, 7-5 Baylor against 9-4 UCLA. And then moving closer to New Year's Day, Bowl from San Antonio, 6:45 Eastern on ESPN, 8-4 Texas against number 15 ranked State, 9-4. That one may have some potential interest to it. And the bowl, they always seem to get a pretty good match. 7:30 Eastern time, number 9, LSU, 10-2, against number 14, Clemson, 2-2. Any of those things grabbing your attention to any degree?
Yeah, I mean, the Chick-fil-A Bowl, it's a bowl that's right there now. You know, it's right outside the top tier. And I don't know, did they get into the rotation? They're close if they didn't. So, LSU, Clemson, you know, not so much, but LSU, they should look pretty good in that game. I definitely like the Alamo Bowl this year. We'll see how good Texas is. They kind of stumbled a little bit. You know, you're right. The ones you just named are the better matchups outside of the BCS Bowls. There really aren't, you know, when you're so – there's 70 damn bowl teams. It just you know, we don't need – no offense, but I'm not sure we need Louisiana Monroe OU anymore, you know? I mean, the Toledo and the first
bowl.
Well,
at least not Louisiana Monroe.
Right. We don't need Louisiana Monroe. Come on. Are you going down to Shreveport for that game, Rick? Is that your plan? Is that part of your holiday travel plan?
I will not be, sadly enough. I did contemplate the Humanitarian Bowl last year, the Potato Bowl or whatever up in Boise, but better of it in the – the way also, too, January 1st, Capital One Bowl, as you said earlier, the only one that's on ABC, number 6, Georgia, 11-2 against number 23, Nebraska, 10-3. By the way, no, a winter classic to channel surf back and forth from this year has not be taking place at the Big House. It will be taking place at the Big House January 1st, 2014, again, assuming the lockout in the NHL is settled by then. So I was going to say it will not be as loaded the New Year's Day thing, certainly.
I will throw a bone to the South Carolina-Michigan matchup. That's one I'll watch because I think Michigan could get throttled by South Carolina. So that'll be an interesting game.
It's funny. You go back to that USC-Texas Classic in the Rose Bowl with Vince Young. That's the last time an SEC team has not won the national championship. A truly remarkable streak. Historic and unprecedented in college football history. It's historic also for Notre Dame to be back in the mix. Their best season clearly since 1988 national championship campaign, which climaxed with a Fiesta Bowl win over West Virginia for the national championship. Your thoughts on this one, Nate? A very, very unlikely game, particularly from the point of view of Notre Dame being here with their perfect season. Alabama at the beginning of the year, okay, we might have had a few teams slotted a little bit above them. Notre Dame was right about in the mid-teens in every poll that I saw coming into this year, but that defense led by Matt Tateo has done an awesome job.
They have, and it's a game of similar styles, I guess, when both defenses have been the dominant forces. I'm not a Notre Dame fan. You know that I rarely, if ever, would root for Notre Dame, but I think I'm going to root for them in this one, but I don't think they have a chance. You know, it's going to have to be one of those, the ball bounced the right way a lot of times for them to be able to beat Alabama. I think Alabama is, you know, a team that could beat Jacksonville in pro football, a team that could beat five or six NFL teams right now. Alabama is so good. Notre Dame, just I don't see what they have on offense to even be able to move the ball against Alabama. I could certainly see it being like 24-0. But I'll be pulling for Notre Dame because I'm tired of SEC. I'm tired of Alabama. But I think we better prepare ourselves because for the very foreseeable future, if not the next 20 years, I can't fathom a season where there's not at least one. And as you and I have talked about off air, most likely at least half the time, two of the Final Four teams will come to the SEC for probably ever. So.
As things stand now, yeah, they have so many structural advantages in their favor. And this is a game also, too, where as a fellow FDH Lounge dignitary, Kyle Ross, a fanboy for the worldwide leader, has pointed out to me rather gleefully, notwithstanding the fact that Alabama is a solid favorite in this game, the ratings should be absolutely phenomenal. They're saying that it could be right up there with any of the previous national championship game. Certainly it should be the highest rated one that's ever been on cable, if we're just limiting it to that universe, because again, I mentioned USC Texas before. With all due respect to Florida, LSU, teams of that ilk in recent years, certainly the Auburn-Oregon game really kind of sums it up perfectly in my mind, where you don't really have, in that game, you didn't have one team that's on that perceived historic century-long top tier. You have two programs here without question in Notre Dame and Alabama, just like you did with USC and Texas. Unquestioned top-tier programs in America, and the heritage of that alone should carry it to a monster number.
Absolutely, and Notre Dame doesn't have its own network for happenstance. You know, there's a reason they're able to get their own network. There's a lot of Notre Dame fans out there. Maybe, you know, and this is great for Notre Dame in the fact that a lot of Notre Dame fans are probably generational Notre Dame fans, you know, people that grew up with Notre Dame being good. People in their 20s and below right now have never seen a good Notre Dame team. This is a chance, you know, for Notre Dame to lock in some fans, especially with people who watched Alabama last year who might be tired of the SEC. Notre Dame might gain a nice additional part of their fan base with a strong performance and maybe an upset win here. They've got to be loving their position right now. And, you know, like I said, I'm going to find myself rooting for Notre Dame, something I never do. But I'm tired of Alabama. I'm tired of the SEC. And I think there's a lot of fans out there that aren't from the South that feel the exact same way. So it'll be an intriguing championship. It'll be one that blows the ratings out of the water. I agree. I mean, everybody wants to, you know, is it going to be close? Is Alabama going to slaughter them? There's so much intrigue. Even if Alabama kills them, it'll still be a good national championship game, I think, just because then we can say, you know, or, wow, Notre Dame almost did it. Either way, and, you know, and there's just no way Notre Dame's going to kill Alabama. But
right.
If you told me to pick, I would definitely say that, you know, can't see how Notre Dame's offense is going to move the ball against Alabama. Got to like Alabama by at least 10 points, probably something like, you know, 24-10. 20-10. I think it'd be more of a low-scoring game. No idea what the total is, but I guess it's, you know, got to be south of like 44, 45. Can't see a lot of points getting put up unless it's all by Alabama and just whacking them. So.
Now, the interesting thing is, though, that presupposes Alabama being able to move the ball on Notre Dame as much as you're speculating with them getting 24 points there. So that's the scenario. Again, I don't think Notre Dame can win this game purely from a handicapping perspective. Notre Dame getting the back door at like 8 points or whatever. If we're talking about like a field goal, field position kind of a battle. I know you and I have joked about this before, you know, how much you love those 16 to 10 field position kind of games here. If we have those kind of ones, if we have that kind of a game right there, that would seem like it really plays into Notre Dame's hands. And like you said, you talk about the ball bouncing the wrong way or something like that, an inopportune fumble, a pick six on a deflection or something like that, boom, maybe Notre Dame steals another one. This has been one of those years, ironically, like the season 10 years ago, the 2002 Ohio State Buckeyes, undefeated as they were this year, but 14-0 that year, winning the national championship. And you remember, as I do, how many close calls, how many, quite frankly, lucky breaks that team had. The kind of game that this might be, if it's a grind-out type of a situation here, would seem like it could play into Notre Dame's hands and give them what you and I would find to be so very unlikely.
Exactly, exactly. So yeah, there is the possibility. It'll be fun to watch either way. So
It will be. And by the way, too, for we've talked a fair amount about networks and coverage today and everything like that. Do you take any gleeful pleasure, as I do, in that I know that ESPN has a secondary contract with the SEC. They get, you know, whatever the number two or three game is in their prime time window on a Saturday night. But you've got Notre Dame that's got their own network in NBC, and you've got the SEC representative, and the SEC's primary game is on CBS every week, and ESPN has to put them over in the national championship game.
I love it. I almost mentioned that earlier, but I thought I was counting on you to bring it up. I mean, it's
wonderful.
It's you know, to a little degree, Bama, but to a huge degree, Notre Dame. I mean, that's NBC.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knows it. So I love it. I love every second.
Oh, it's got to be painting them. It's got to be eating at their very souls. And that's a great thing for all that pull it off. Skip big crap that we end up getting force-fed from them. It's a nice little bit of a karma here in the holidays, perhaps. I agree with you that I think Al is likely to win this game and probably even beat the number. But, yeah, it should be a fascinating matchup and one that should go down to the fourth quarter nevertheless. But, Nate, always breaking it down with you, my friend. Looking forward to doing so again in the very near future. Thank you so much, buddy.
Thanks for your time, Rick. I appreciate it. You have a good one. Thank you.
Thank you, you too. And thank you all for tuning in. Mini episode number 222 of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.